Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. Woo-hoo! This is our weekly Hoops HD report, where we go over all the news and notes about all the major conferences and anything else we'd like to discuss. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, up here in the middle, joined by, on one side, we've got David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Salica down below, John Titel, and Joby Fortson. Did I get everybody? I guess that's a yes.
All right. Yeah, it's the day after the Super Bowl, which means for the next 8 weeks, college basketball is on page one, guys.
It is.
It's now into the Final Four, yeah.
It's kind of the second half of the season started here after that thrilling game on Saturday between the Patriots and the Rams. Oh, I mean, that was the Lane 10 action. I mean,
it was a pretty decent game.
it was
better than the football game. I mean,
that's one the Patriots actually lost, too. So,
yeah.
We've got a lot to go over tonight about all the college basketball action. We're not going to be talking about the Super Bowl. You can go to other places for that. And David, you are not allowed to take your shirt off during the halftime show of tonight's show either and dance around like Adam Levine.
Well, they should have booked me for the halftime show. I would have
been better.
Twice as much for half the cost.
But I actually want to start things off with something a little bit different. You hear a lot about it on TV, the blind resumes around this time of year and as we get further on. And I'm going to start with a blind resume comparison right on the screen here.
Chad, this isn't different. You've done it before.
There's a little bit different, though, because we can no longer see team names. It's a little bit tougher to figure out who's who on this new version. It just says Homer Road. Can you see it all?
What the hell? Okay. Oh, okay. Well,
Okay, well, you can't see the teams,
then how are we supposed to know?
Well, let me go to our noted bracketologists here, both Rocco Miller and John Titel. Let me start with you. These two resumes, which resume is a better resume, the left or the right here?
Let me do a little detective work if I could. So
without guessing who it is, yeah, just on what we see
just
here.
Just some clues for our crowd. So if you look at the remaining schedules, you see the team on the right has a bunch of triple-digit games remaining, and the team on the left has mostly double-digit teams remaining.
Okay.
So that clue, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the left team is a power conference team and the right team is a mid-major team, correct?
Okay. Yeah. That's probably correct, but look at what these two teams have done so far.
So I know who the one on the right is.
Okay.
The strength of schedule is much worse for the right because they're mid-major, I assume. The 9-0 conference record limits the number of teams who the mid-major could be because there's only about a dozen or so teams that are still undefeated in conference play. And unlike the home court hero on the left, who's 1-4 on the road, the team on the right has been dominant on the road, 8-3. Very impressive.
Okay, well, and Rocco, let me bring you in here. Which team do you like better as a bracketologist, the right or the left?
Based on results this far, I have to choose the team on the right with the better
Yes! Road. I don't know who the team on the left is, but I'm almost certain I know who the team on the right is.
Right. And this is, John Titel did a great job with his detective work in trying to identify a power team versus a mid-major. I think we have some ideas who these might be. But regardless of the fact, if the season ended today, the team on the right would be more deserving of the bid. However, with the remaining schedule, as John did a great job of pointing out, you know, this could easily tip the scales pretty quickly.
Would you agree with that, Titel, that both these teams are at least similar profiles overall right now as we look at it?
If you're talking about profiles being based on who did you beat and where did you beat them and what tiers, I would agree.
Okay.
No, the one on the right has 8 road wins. The one on the left, who I have a pretty good guess at who that is, only has 1.
Well, let's go ahead and put display it here. On the left there is that Power Conference team. Should be coming up in a second.
Is it or
we're going to freeze the screen here.
Are we allowed to get
San Antonio. It's UTSA.
Hold on a second. We had a little problem here, a little technical glitch. So we won't know what teams these were.
Real climactic there, Chad.
And once again,
Texas has a lot more losses than that.
We totally failed.
Our budget is a little tight this year.
Our budget was tight, but here we go. Team on the left, the Auburn Tigers. Team on the right, the Lipscomb Bison. Are you guys surprised by that?
My initial guess was it was going to be NC State, but then Titel pointed out during chat that the strength of schedule was way too high for it to be the Wolfpack.
I'm not surprised by that, and I think the teams are relatively equal. I really do. I mean, Lipscomb is not getting the buzz that the Buffaloes in the Gonzaga, deservedly with Gonzaga, you know, the Duke win. But the Buffaloes of the world are getting, and maybe they should. I do think Auburn's the tournament team. Maybe Lipscomb is inside that bubble too.
I've been banging the Lipscomb drum for a while, and I've had them ahead of Auburn for a couple of weeks. So, thank you, Chad.
And John T, you today had or yesterday you did a seed list where you had Auburn an 8 seed and Lipscomb a 12. Are they that far apart, really?
You can make the argument, as we've just made for the past several minutes, that they are closer. I mean, I really don't think that you can get swept by Belmont and be like a top 8 seed. I understand that losing to South Carolina is not great, but it was on the road, and the Gamecocks are playing pretty well in the past 4 weeks, I would say.
Fair enough.
And the other thing that gets lost,
he's guessing that the committee will get it wrong.
Right.
The other thing that gets lost in the tiers is I do think tier two, remember, they're breaking tier one and tier two into parts, and we haven't done it on our screens. But when you're beating Alabama like they did this weekend, that is a high tier two win. It should be taken into account because, I mean, number 46 is inside bubbles. And that was a good win this week, whereas it's not just a tier two. It's a good tier one win.
Yeah.
And let's talk about some of the other games here. We see this week's schedule. And let me start with you. Kentucky, very impressive with the road win at Florida, I thought. Even though it was a Florida team that had struggled, they'd start turning things around a little bit before that game.
A good argument can be made for Kentucky as one of the hottest teams in the nation. You all remember opening night, 34-point loss to Duke. It's all but forgotten. They've won 18 of 20. The two losses are this close. 1-point overtime to Seton Hall at the Garden. 2-point loss at Alabama. They almost overcame a double-digit deficit in the final 3 minutes. I'm sure Rocco is thrilled to have Quadi Green heading west to join the Huskies next year. He actually left in December. But they got a Pac-12 forward of their own in Reed Travis. When you pair him with P.J. Washington, a great nucleus of 6'8 forwards in the middle, surround them with freshmen who can score, even though it's only February. They're really growing up fast. They're one of four SEC teams who have a record above 500 in conference play. That's the good news. The bad news, each of their next three home games are against the other three teams, South Carolina, LSU, and the number one team in the country.
Well, you talk about South Carolina. Rocco, last week, Tennessee, who is just continues to roll, blew out that South Carolina team. They were just talking about how well they were playing recently, and then picked up the win at A&M on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee is, you know, they're a force to be reckoned with. They're on a mission. I think, you know, when you have a couple of guys like Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams, with all the experience they gained last year and the success they had, disappointing loss to Loyola Chicago, of course, in the second round, they're going to come back with a chip on their shoulder, and that's what they've been doing all year. The game I really watched them the closest was the win against Gonzaga in Phoenix. Thought that was very impressive to pull that game out against a very pro-Gonzaga crowd. And now they've steamrolled right into the conference. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens when they finally play Kentucky.
Right. And Joby, another game that happened this weekend was at Ole Miss. I'm sorry, David, actually, I wanted to ask you about the Ole Miss-Mississippi State game. And I think you had some thoughts on it, didn't you?
Well, yeah, it was a nice road win for Mississippi State. I think it was easily, if you pull up their profile, it had been really flimsy, kind of paper mache. I mean, their record was bloated, but you'll see here in a second, Mississippi College, I believe D3 there, or maybe it's NAIA.
There's Mississippi State. There you go.
Yeah, and you know, and I know that that's a lot of tier one, but a Cincinnati team that hasn't been the best on the road, a real nice win against Wofford. I still think this win at Ole Miss is their best win of the year, and it's their only win away from home against the team that's in the field. So there you go. You got to admire that these two teams, in my opinion, we saw this, I think, with Creighton and Wichita State for a couple of years, maybe with Louisville and North Carolina. Do they have some sort of road game exchange program going? Because, earlier in the year, Ole Miss went to Mississippi State and won.
And that's interesting, Salika, when you look at a profile, isn't it better to, if you're going to split with the team, to both win on the road? Does that boost both your profiles with the road wins?
Well, it gives you a nice road win, but the trade-off is you also have more of a home loss that can sting because Ole Miss actually now becomes a Tier 2 loss. Granted, it's a high Tier 2 and then kind of a lower Tier 1 road win for Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's true, David. It does give you that home loss, which could be a bad, a worse home loss if you do that exchange.
Right. I still think the road win outweighs it because, you know, but I mean, it was a good win. It was a really good win. And that was a showcase game for Ole Miss. They were sold out. It was an electric crowd. I thought it was the best I'd seen them all year.
I want to talk about one other team here, Joby. Arkansas, nice road win at LSU. And are they suddenly on your radar now with that win?
They're not just in. Yeah, and given what happened to the bubble this week, I mean, the bubble, we're going to be going team, conference by conference, going, oh, Arizona blowing their chance. Oh, you know, NC State. Oh, we're going to go through a lot of teams where the bubble, on the bubble, besides Indiana, we'll get to them, who really blew their chances this weekend. Arkansas was way out. The J&G had them the 24th team out. Where does the J&G have them today after a road win that they deserve because they controlled the game? It might have only been a one-point win, but Arkansas was up double digits. The J&G actually has them in the field. I'm not saying they are, et cetera, especially with the two Tier 3 losses. But even those Tier 3 losses, Georgia Tech and Western Kentucky, have gotten other scouts. The fact of the matter is, Arkansas did what other bubble teams aren't, and we're going to see. I mean, in the SEC, you're going to have to prove it not just once but many times. But getting a road win at the conference leader, no one else had beaten LSU in the SEC to this point. That is a heck of a win by the Razorbacks. It gets them in the game. It gets them in the discussion. Now, hey, Arkansas, everybody's paying attention now. Now you got to go out and prove it. And you can't just go out and lose to Vanderbilt at home the very next game.
Right. Those next three games are huge there. Vanderbilt at South Carolina, at Missouri. You got to win all three of those.
I agree, Chad. And that's good to point out. Two of them are on the road. But still, if you're a tournament team, you should be expected. None of those teams are really anywhere near the field right now. South Carolina might be playing like it at times, but if you're a tournament team, then you got to beat teams that aren't near the field.
Right, and you could slip up in a game like that if you are a top team right now. But when you played with fire early this season, you lost those bad home games to Georgia Tech and Western Kentucky. You don't have that margin for error to slip up in a game.
Right, yeah.
Let's keep things going here. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule in the SEC. Rocco, let me bring you back in here. What games are you circling here for this week as that schedule comes up in the SEC?
See what we got here. So you Florida at Auburn. I mean, Florida desperately needs a road win. Auburn is not safe by any means, as you talked about at the top of the show. So I think that's a key game for both clubs. Auburn's been very tough at home, so it'd be impressive if Florida could pull that out. And then looking ahead to Saturday, another chance for Florida at Tennessee, probably swinging above their belt on that game. But how about, that Arkansas-South Carolina game? South Carolina 6-2 in the league. Arkansas needs a little bit more meat on the bone to even be really inside the bubble. So that should be interesting.
And I think we got to circle this Kentucky at Mississippi State. If Mississippi State's got to make a statement, this will be the week for them to make it. Tytel, you're laughing at that.
Rocco, are you telling me an Arkansas-South Carolina game is, quote, interesting?
Come on. the bubble is so thin that I'm just looking for some new teams to pop up, and I was hoping one of them would emerge.
Good luck. Who's playing this week?
There we go.
let's jump over to the Big Ten, which had one of the strangest games, David, of the entire season on Saturday as a seven-in-a-row loss Indiana team that got – that just awful, went to Michigan State, one of the best teams in the nation, and of course they got blown out, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know where it ranks in terms of surprises. UMBC over Virginia was a big surprise, but after the game was over, you could sort of analyze it and make some sense of it. It's the same with any big upset. This is stupefying. It is utterly preposterous. I don't remember anything quite like this. I don't know how you all feel, but I was scratching my head for hours afterward. I still can't explain it. Indiana had not looked good really at any point in the last month. They'd lost seven in a row, and most of those games weren't close. If you pull up the profile, pull up the scores, they weren't just losing. They weren't even competing. And to go there and beat a team that we thought was that some of you all had as a one seed and that we all agreed was on pace to get a one seed just seemed utterly ridiculous. And it wasn't like a good team that was capable of really playing up and getting up for the game. Indiana hadn't looked good in a long time. And what a gutsy win.
I was going to say, Michigan State had actually beaten Indiana 21 out of the last 22 times at the Breslin Center. There have been much better Indiana teams that just haven't fared well up there. So for this unit to do it coming off of a seven-game losing streak, even more shocking. And that's a case where I think we can use that adjective.
Well, and Joby, a real interesting game coming up this week is Iowa, who picked up the other huge upset on Friday night, knocking off Michigan at home. Is now going to be at Indiana later on this week.
Yeah, I mean, these are two teams. Yeah, we talked about Rocco. I think well stated. You know, hey, I just want someone else to come into the bubble. You know, Indiana was sliding off that bubble. They are now back in. You don't have to worry about that for Iowa. Iowa has been really solid this year. This is one of those teams that's been silent. People aren't talking about them, but they're slowly but surely, quietly building the sort of resume that all of a sudden they're collecting a protected seed at the end of the day. You know, they're getting close to that range right now, and if other teams falter, I mean, they have to leapfrog guys, but if other teams falter – there are opportunities for them, especially in a conference as deep as the Big Ten, who I think as a whole is going to really start supplying a lot of those white jerseys when it comes down to it.
I don't know about a protected seed, but I want them to get – if Iowa State is a 3, I want Iowa to be a 6, and I want them in Des Moines.
That'd be great.
If Iowa State is a 4, I want Iowa as a 5, and I want them in Des Moines. We've got to make this happen.
Took a couple other teams here. Tytel, the other big game Friday night, Wisconsin with a nice home win over Maryland. A very hot Badgers team now, isn't it?
They were very cold right after Christmas. They lost 4 of 5, but they won 5 in a row. Each of their 6 losses this season by 7 or less, they're in every single game for a couple of reasons. Number one is the 3-point shooting. Over 40% from behind the arc is number 9 in the country. Number 2, of course, Ethan Happ. Talk about, he can't make a free throw. He can't make a 3-pointer to save his life. But he's good at everything else on the court. He's got 2 triple-doubles this year. He's on pace to become the first guy, the only guy in the past quarter century with a season of 18 points, 10 boards, and 5 assists a game. And as we see soon, Wisconsin's schedule next week, they're going to need him playing his A game.
Yeah, they will. And Rocco, one other team I want to bring up here is the Purdue Boilermakers. Went 2-0 this week, but needed overtime to get by Penn State, and were down most of that game against Minnesota until they came back on Sunday. Is this Purdue team good, or are they getting lucky here? What's going on with them?
Yeah, I got a chance to see both those games. I think Purdue is a quality basketball club. I think Carson Edwards might be the best player in the Big Ten, and you know, I think they're not as deep as they were last year, so I think they're not going to be able to cruise by the middle of the pack Big Ten teams like they may have a year ago or with some of their stronger rosters they've had in the past. So they are going to have to grind out games, but I do really like this resume they've built this far. I think, you know, you throw in that big win over Michigan State the week before, they've now won 7 straight and 10 of their last 11. So Purdue's certainly trending in the right direction. I don't know if they can maintain this because I don't think there is a big gap between them and 4 through 7 in the league. But right now tied for first. So very impressive.
Yeah. Salika, here's the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten. And
well, there's one more team we have to talk about. When you look at what Nebraska is doing, despite the dark web, Tim Miles just 1 game out of 10th, which means they are just 8 games away from the Final Four again. Phenomenal coaching up in Lincoln.
Salika, the upcoming schedule of the Big Ten, as Tytel hinted at, was a huge week for Wisconsin, at Minnesota, at Michigan, correct?
Huge week for them, but also another potential spoiler is going to be this Illinois team that's quietly won 3 games out of the past couple weeks, and that includes a win against a fading Nebraska team.
Are you saying they're beating Michigan State tomorrow night?
It's going to be interesting because Michigan State is going to be having a little bit of a letdown. I don't expect
letdown. I think Michigan State's going to be pissed off going into that game.
That depends, because even Tom Izzo was kind of apologetic after that game because he was saying it was on him that they weren't really prepared for that Indiana game. But I wouldn't discount the Illini either, but I wouldn't quite pick them to beat Michigan State on Tuesday.
Also an interesting game here, Saturday, Minnesota at Michigan State. Minnesota, a team that kind of is all over the place, I think. But let's keep rolling here. Let's go over to the ACC, where we just saw tonight Louisville with a real nice road win at Virginia Tech. I think it's like the 5 millionth time in a row they've beaten Va Tech, too.
Uncle Buzz, not in – yeah, just a rough week.
But
let's
– Go ahead, David.
Well, there was an atrocity on Saturday. I'll leave it at that. Would we like to discuss that?
Well, Joby, I think you want to discuss it. I guess highlighted it there, and that is not a typo.
I mean, it is just remarkable. I mean, you'd think Michael Vick was back at Virginia Tech, scoring 47, very impressive for the football team there. But yeah, 24 points breaks all sorts of records in the shot clock era. Unbelievable. And this is a team, and NC State has so much on the line right now. They don't have the wins against the field. Their schedule, when we met last week, was at 349 out of 353. I think it's at 351 now. These teams just getting worse and worse. I mean, it's every day they're going to get to 353 by the end. It's 352.
Yep.
352. I mean, my goodness.
It went down. Oh, that means everybody that they've played lost.
You can look at tier four. How many 300 wins there are. And the thing is, they're playing against each other. It's like, well, USC Upstate loses to UNC. I mean, it's just remarkable how bad the scheduling is. But, hey, they have the Auburn win, which is, as we show with our blind resume, is not, you know, that impressive anymore.
I don't remember ever seeing a team with that has played 6 non-conference games against sub-315 teams. There are not that many sub-315.
And you add in two 280s. You add in two 280s on top of it. It's awful. But the fact of the matter is, NC State, they even slipped up against Wake. Given all of that, if NC State goes out this week and wins in Chapel Hill, don't put it past them because of the way this rivalry works.
Also, I think we also have to shout out to some of our friends.
That's how bad the bubble is. We're talking about, I mean, they came within inches of beating Virginia. Yeah, in overtime. I mean, now Virginia kind of let off the gas. There are Ty Jerome back issues for Virginia. And he pretty much did not, you know, was not effective, and that allowed NC State back in the game. But just the same, they almost got there, not just a tier one, the win against number one in the country, according to the net.
Jesus Christ. If I wanted to see somebody fail at scoring that bad, I'd go to the bar with you guys.
And they even had a shot in that Virginia game. Yeah. 3 free throws. You got to make all 3 to tie to send it to double overtime. The very first one misses. And then the third one, when you need to miss it, is a beautiful swish right down the middle, and not like the clank swish that goes in when you're trying to miss it. He actually was trying to make it with 0.4 on the clock. I mean, insanity. But anyway.
Yes. Sleek, are you going to comment on the NC State?
I was going to say, from a historical standpoint, this is the lowest point total in the shot clock for a ranked team to end up with only 24 points. It was about a decade ago where St. Louis was unranked, managed only 20 points against GW on the road back when Majerus was still coaching there.
I would know NC State no longer ranked. But Tytel, how about the team that beat them, though? How about the Hokies?
Hokie high. They're playing great. They've had 3 losses this year, all of them on the road. At Penn State by 1 point is looking terrible because of Penn State, but it was only 1 point. They got blew out, but they were the 2 great teams in Virginia and the Tar Heels. Even a better shooting team than Wisconsin, 42%, number 3 in the nation. The X factor, their point guard Dustin Robinson is out indefinitely after suffering a foot injury last week when they beat Miami. Did not help them tonight when they lost to Louisville. Certainly did not hurt them against the Wolfpack. I would show the shot chart on the air, but it's X-rated. You can't. I'm not going to show it to anybody.
Rocco, let's go back to the standings here. North Carolina picked up the nice road win at Louisville, getting revenge for that earlier home loss also this weekend. That was another big game, I think.
Yeah, and I think David on our email did a good job pointing out some of these home and home swap road wins to improve resumes, like we saw with Mississippi and Mississippi State. It does make you scratch your head a little bit, but hey, more power to them. They're gaming the system if they're getting.
I don't actually think they're gaming.
I'm kind of playing along, but no, good win by North Carolina. I think Carolina is a better team than Louisville and should be able to beat them. On the road, and they kind of made up for a really poor performance at home earlier this year.
Well, I've got the upcoming schedule here on the right, and I think there's only one game even worth mentioning. It is Saturday night, and of course it is Georgia Tech at Notre Dame. Duke at Virginia.
I am.
the return game. Game day comes back. We'll see if Virginia goes 4-for-4. And I'm talking about the half-court shot. they have to date. Virginia is 3-for-3 on the game day. The students nail in the half-court shot. We'll see if it's 4-for-4. I think ESPN's only had like 10 total, and Virginia's got three of them. But this game's going to be very interesting. It's almost a reverse of what happened last time, where Trey Jones's injury was the big question mark. And, of course, he missed the game, but Duke still won. This time it's Ty Jerome, who hasn't played in a week and a half now. Virginia is very fortunate not to have a midweek game this particular week.
Well, but they got to play 2 days later at North Carolina.
Yes, that is indeed. But, yeah, a lot will reside because while Virginia beat Miami by 10, it was – and Virginia's defense was still Virginia's defense. I mean, holding Miami to 46, you saw the offense completely go different. Kie Clark, solid freshman, will take the point guard duties, but – he did something that you don't do at Virginia. He had 6 assists, like Jerome would, and 6 turnovers. Virginia leads the – or at least did – leads the country averaging only 8 turnovers a game. You cannot do that in a Virginia uniform. Ty Jerome doesn't. Kie Clark, only a freshman, making those mistakes. And I think against Duke, turnovers become extremely deadly – because that means a lot of dunks for Mr. Zion Williams.
All right, let's keep things rolling here. I do want to note quickly that it is also a big week for Florida State, a game at Syracuse, at home game against Louisville. That's one of the teams I would note has a real big week ahead. But let's keep things rolling over to the Big 12. And, Tytel, let me start off with you. I think you wanted to discuss this Iowa State team who picked up a couple of wins this week.
Yes, the jury out there currently playing as we go live here, but we'll see what happens against the Sooners. They had a tough loss at Phog Allen a couple weeks ago. They had a lead in the second half, just couldn't get it done, but they bounced back, beat Mississippi, West Virginia, and the Longhorns. They're a half game back of Baylor and Kansas State for the conference lead right now, as you can see on your screen. They need more consistency, in my opinion, from Lindell Wigginton. He was a all-Big 12 caliber player last year, injured earlier this year, comeback has been very up and down. 23 points a game average against Mississippi and West Virginia, terrible against Texas, 5 points and 4 turnovers. They've had 3 conference losses by a combined 8 points, which shows 2 things. 1, they're in every game like Wisconsin. 2, there's so little margin for error in this conference because everybody's bunched up. It's not Kansas and everybody else this year.
And Rocco, we get past those first 5 teams. Those next 3, Texas, TCU, and Oklahoma, all seem to be head scratchers this year. Texas beats Kansas, loses to Iowa State. TCU gets crushed by Baylor. Oklahoma loses to West Virginia this weekend. What's going on with these 3 middle teams there, I guess?
It's tough to decipher. I think, you know, I guess out of the 3, Texas has the most going for them because they have the Kansas win, which is more of an elite win.
And losses already, though.
Exactly. They got that the loss problem, which they had last year, and they were still able to get in pretty safely. And so it's almost like a repeat of last year from what I'm seeing. They've got a road win at first place Kansas State that looks a little bit better today than it did before. And then Oklahoma, of course, is in free fall mode. But if you look at their full body of work, they're still a little bit safe for now. TCU, they definitely need some more meat on the bone. So I think their tougher part of their schedule is coming. And so it's a wait-and-see mode, but it does feel a little bit like last year, especially for the Red River teams.
Right. And Joby, Iowa State, I think you wanted to just bring them up as well. They had the nice home win over Texas.
Yeah, no, Iowa State is it's like their brethren. And I think David's comment earlier on Iowa was very funny, very accurate. And I'm with you. And they are climbing up the charts silently. I think, you know, you're getting those wins. But the other team I will put a little side component in is Baylor. The Baylor Bears. Mekhi Mason, 40 points against TCU. Oh, my goodness. That is what, you know, we thought that injuries would hurt them. No, a comeback from our friend from the Hotchkiss School is – come in and infused what is now a Baylor team that the sky's the limit. Are they the team that ends the reign of terror that Kansas has had over this conference for 15 years?
Yeah, interesting week, David, for Baylor. They're at Texas and host Kansas State. But, David, the big game this week is tomorrow night's the biggest rival for Kansas. They're at Kansas State.
Yeah. Again, they're used to have a bigger rival. We don't get to see that anymore. We don't get to see him play Missouri anymore. But, yeah, that one will be – I don't – Kansas has one true road win, and I know that they haven't exactly been playing in the easiest road games. But, if I mean, this is a team that we thought was a one-seed, protected seed. You got to win more than one. Now, they don't need to win tomorrow, but eventually they need to beat somebody on the road. So tomorrow would be big, not just for the rivalry, but it would be more of – it would actually be one of their more important wins up to this point, simply because they only have one.
Let's go over to the Big East. And Sleeka, you're our Big East
guy. Missouri would be a much better game. I wish they were playing that.
Sleeka, you're a Big East guy here, and but your team, unfortunately, is not the one team I want to discuss. But how about some of the teams on top, especially Villanova, who struggled – I think both their games this week, but they did pick up two more wins.
They struggle a little bit more at home against Georgetown on Sunday, where the Hoyas, they were competitive for probably around 37, 38 minutes before the Wildcats made a game-breaking run towards the end of that one. And unlike their first game at home against DePaul, they didn't have as much of a letdown this point. But I think the other team we have to look at, besides Marquette, would be the St. John's team, who just completely blew away Creighton, because that game was a little further apart than what the final score indicated. They did have their pride wounded a little bit on Saturday, but I don't think that was as devastating as it was important that they at least get a road win of significance at Creighton on Wednesday.
And Rocco, we're here again with a Big East situation again, where 8 out of the 10 teams are sub 500. One game separates third place from ninth. What did it do?
I don't know how long this can last, but it we keep getting to Sunday and having this situation. It's great. It's very comical. And St. John's, Seton Hall, they're hanging on. I was, like Sleeka mentioned, impressed that St. John's went into Omaha on dollar beer night and took care of business the way they did. that was not expected. I think Creighton's still a tough trip, no matter, you know, how strong their team is for anybody in this league. So well done by St. John's, despite the Duke loss. But I think, I think Georgetown's a much tougher team, and Tytel knows this firsthand, than their resume shows so far. And we'll see if they get enough opportunities to get themselves into the bubble picture.
But I also think the hard luck team for this past week would have been Seton Hall, because they dug themselves an early 16-point hole against Butler, and we were actually able to tie that game towards the closing minutes, but a critical goaltending call in the final minute cost the Pirates.
Let's get back to the top of the conference. Tytel, how about Marquette right there on Villanova's heels? And we've been ranking them above Villanova in some of our bracket rundown shows.
I mean, apparently, Rocco wants to rank Georgetown up there as well. I don't think they're there. No, Marquette's looking great. They started out with a tough little season of 3-2, but they've been unstoppable, Kentucky-esque, 16 of 17 since then. As Rocco stated, anybody can beat up on the middle of the Big East this year, because they're all – perfectly mediocre. Marquette is going to have to beat up on the top of the conference. They face Villanova twice this month, probably again in the conference tourney title game next month. And like I, as you see tonight, I'm focusing on great teams who can shoot threes. I mentioned Wisconsin. I mentioned Virginia Tech. Now I mention Marquette, 40% from behind the arc, number 10 in the nation. Marcus Howard, he's slowed down a bit. He's not making 10 threes a game like he was last month. His free throw shooting remains insane. He's made 80 of his past 86 at the line. Any close game, give him the ball, he gets fouled, he converts, and they win.
Yeah.
I've been doing Yeah, I've been doing some Griggs math here. The bottom eight teams, 3 through 10, 1-17 against the top two. I did that on my own. I figured that all out.
We've got a couple potential trap games Tuesday, Wednesday night. Marquette and Nova hosting St. John's and Creighton, respectively, just because of the huge game, Joby, coming up Saturday, Villanova at Marquette.
I'm huge in so many ways. We will determine. Yeah, it'll be interesting for the bracket rundown show, who will be ahead, Villanova or Marquette. We'll have an answer, I think, after Saturday on who will take over this conference. Yeah, there'll be a return trip, but this is the one. I think if Marquette can show and hold serve, that they will be the new champions maybe of the Big East, which I thought they'd be a good team this year, but I could never have foreseen them overtaking Villanova. The one comment I will say on Villanova is, look at that tempo number. Wisconsin or Virginia or Villanova? I've never seen Villanova at in the 340s. So maybe that is what Jay Wright has found to right the ship, so to speak, after the Furman loss.
Well, let's move over to the Conference of Champions. And Tytel, I'm just going to let you take what happened in the Arizona State game. I'll put it right up on the screen for you here, and you can just go for it.
The only good thing that came out of this game is this photo. Turley getting ready to inbound the ball, and he got it right in the chops. As he's falling down, he's complaining to the ref about the call. It's sad to me that we couldn't get it done in overtime against our hated in-state rival, but kudos to Hurley for getting his first win, the family's first win, against my Wildcats, who are leaking oil like a horribly old vehicle. They were 13-4 in mid-January, my Cats, at the distant memory after losing 4 of 5. Hopefully, Brandon Williams Springy gets healthy very soon, as Rocco's Huskies will visit Tucson on Thursday night and probably beat us by double digits. The lone bright spot in Tucson is that we have not one but two McDonald's All-Americans coming in next year, Josh Green and Nico Mannion. The future is bright. The present is very dark.
Well, David, what about that Washington team? I know, Rocco, I'll get your take on them here in a second also. I know you're a Washington guy, but this team just playing such good basketball right now, I think,
yeah,
despite the conference that they're in.
Maybe because of the conference they're in. But, I think that they are good. They're definitely tournament good. They might even be top half of the bracket good. They probably are, and they're in a conference with maybe one other bubble team and a bunch of NIT teams, and they are running roughshod over it. But, to win at Oregon, at Oregon State, at Colorado, at Utah, I mean, getting it done on the road, and when you look at their losses, they were right in that Gonzaga game. They had a chance at the buzzer, or at least in the final seconds, to potentially win it. The only game where they really kind of crapped themselves was very early on against Auburn. But other than that, I think that game was so pitiful that we just kind of dismissed Washington and figured that they weren't really playing anybody. But that's really the only game this season where they haven't had at least a decent account of themselves. They're good enough to run the table, and I think that they will in the Pac-12.
And Rocco, you being a Washington guy, actually, I thought when I was ready to give up on the Huskies was that Minnesota game that they completely blew. The Auburn game I kind of wrote off as a cross-country trip type of problem.
I agree with you. Well, the Auburn game was just two days after opening night and had to get all the way down there on a couple of flights and a tough atmosphere. They came out really flat. I think it was like 25-4. To start the game, and it was over before it began. But and then the VTech game was really similar. Played that in your hometown, Atlantic City. But the Gonzaga game, like you guys mentioned, was a seesaw game where the Huskies fought. Every time it looked like Gonzaga would run away with it, the Huskies came right back. It was that to me, I think, turned the corner for the team's psyche and the confidence level. And you're seeing guys come off the bench like Naz Carter, who would start probably for any other Pac-12 team. It's been great because on one hand, you know, this is shaping up to be a team that can dominate a league, and you got the rest of the country kind of treating the Pac-12 like a mid-major and making fun of the league. And it's kind of a perfect storm from a fan's perspective, because I think we can sneak up on a lot of teams in the tournament, because I don't think they're going to take us as seriously because the league's so down. However, it's on the other hand, it's very dangerous, because any slip up after this week, I think any slip up this week is fine, but any slip up after this week puts us right back into bubble territory. So it's a really interesting position to be in, but really proud of the way they've played.
Yeah, and Joby, the two games to circle this week, obviously Thursday night, Saturday, Washington-Arizona State.
And it's so important. And Rocco kind of hinted at this, I think, pretty accurately. Those games might be bigger for the home teams than they are for the Huskies. I mean, Arizona State, I think, is inside the bubble right now. But, man, a Washington win would mean a lot to actually do that. The Arizona, they still did something out of conference. And thus, if this is their last shot, this might be or one of their last shots to do something, anything. They're out right now. They can – Titel, I know he's deeply in on his team, but, my gosh, they're not as far as you think because the bubble stinks that much.
Well, I
guess one more point on the Pac-12, Stalika. Let me ask you this question.
But they need this one, I would say.
Yeah. I'm going to pull up a profile here on the right side of the screen that, believe it or not, is a Power Conference profile. can they do it, John? John S. Can they go the rest of the season on another win?
Well, it's going to be tough losing to Washington State at home, but I honestly do not see them being competitive in many of the other games here.
Yeah, they gave Stanford a battle this weekend, but they did find a way to lose it. So congratulations to the Golden Bears there.
God, what a mess.
Let's jump over to the American Conference. And Titel, Houston continues to just dominate and almost quietly 21-1 right now.
Yes, I hope the Cal doesn't have to play Houston because it will be 22-1 shortly after. It's amazing. Like, we have to start thinking since it's February. The last time we had a one-loss team in college basketball, that 2015 Kentucky team, they were actually undefeated 38-0, and then they ran into the Badgers in the Final Four and finished 38-1. To give you an idea of how great that team was, not that 38-0 should give you an indication that they're anything but amazing, they had Devin Booker coming off the bench, for God's sake. Unbelievable. Anywho, Houston's in the middle of their only four-game stretch all year where they face four top 100 teams in a row. They did get the revenge game against Temple last Thursday. The next three, not easy, at UCF, host Cincinnati, at UConn. They're doing it with defense. You cannot make threes against this team. They only allowed 26% from behind the arc, number two in the nation.
Rocco, I've got to ask you this question. Our good friend Zach posed it on the email, our email thread the other day. Should we be paying any attention to South Florida?
Please don't.
Not yet. No,
thank you.
They'll have to do something on the road. I think they get UCF on the road in a week from Wednesday night. So if they can go and beat their rivals in Orlando, then I think we can start talking about them.
Let's pull up quickly the upcoming schedule here for this week in the American. David should be.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the Cincinnati team because they've got a very bloated record, a similar record to what they had last year, although last year they hadn't played that strong of a schedule. This year it's even a little bit weaker, but is this team possibly better than what we're giving them credit for? Or is it just a lot of wins against teams that aren't that good?
Don't we find out this week at Memphis, at Houston?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if they go to Houston and win, yeah, for sure.
I think if they go to Houston, they're competitive and they win at Memphis. I think that's going to show a lot.
Yeah.
If they played against East Carolina, it's not going to show very much.
Right. It'll show quite a bit. But they're not very good.
Mountain West time. And Joby, let me bring you in here on the Mountain West and Nevada, another team with only one loss.
Well, they had the revenge game because they should have had two losses. And they should have lost to Boise on the first round. They took it out. Don't let that 20-point margin fool you. They really stretched it out on Boise. They got their vengeance back. They haven't played the close game since Boise, as I recall. The problem is it's the same problem that poor Washington has. They just don't have anybody in their conference to play.
Well, what about Utah State though? A top 40 net ranking. Is there anything on this?
Look, I pull it up, and I don't see it. I mean, yeah. St. Mary's is not in this field, and they're not close. I don't care.
I guess the Rocco. I'm seeing some people having Utah State very. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people with Utah State close to the bubble here, which I don't get.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I don't think those people are doing that on results based. I think their net is very strong. Their predictive metrics are very strong. And I think, you know, maybe, perhaps, I don't know, these folks are taking the easy way out and going with those metrics versus results.
Yeah. One of the things that would bolster Utah State up inside the bubble is if they beat you, is if they're able to beat Nevada, which would be big for Nevada because it would mean a win against the team inside the bubble.
Utah
State already lost to Nevada. The problem is they've already lost their road game at Nevada. That's
yeah.
what we heard. And that was the flexion point that creates this to be a one bid league, or if Nevada were upset in the tournament.
Now, see, had they been smart and set up that home, road win exchange program.
Utah State this week is at Fresno and at San Diego State, but Titel, Nevada is going to be at Colorado State and then hosting their revenge game on Saturday against New Mexico.
I want to talk about any other team, but we can't. Nevada's head and shoulders, even though the conference record, Utah State and Fresno State are right there. I love revenge games, but think about this. We mentioned earlier where Houston took care of Temple. Imagine that you had lost to a New Mexico team, a bad New Mexico team, by 27 points just last month. What do you think is going to happen when they travel to Reno on Saturday? They're going to get destroyed.
Yeah. Oh, Chad, look at what we've got Saturday, though. We've got a front range game. We love the front range.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One more front range game, although the championship, didn't we already give it to, like, Johnson Wales this year or something like that? Front range.
Wyoming has a pair of front range games this week. But
Frank doesn't like to visit the front range. It's pretty much killed his resume.
Yeah. West Coast Conference, another conference that's looking like a one-bid league unless there's an upset in the conference tournament, despite the seasons that San Francisco and St. Mary's has. But let me ask the question, though. Rocco, you're right. You're not that far from San Francisco and St. Mary's. I've seen people talking about both these schools as still being in the conversation. Are they?
Well, I think in San Francisco's case, the two losses they picked up recently were on the road at St. Mary's across the water here, and then down at San Diego, who's a tough team in their own right. Of course, none of these teams are on Gonzaga's level or close. Gonzaga's been proving that throughout the year. But I do like San Francisco's, you know, there's not a lot of bad because I don't think losing at San Diego or at St. Mary's kills you, but they will need to beat Gonzaga. And if it happens in the tournament, it won't matter anyway because they'll be in with an auto bid. But they're the only team I'm still kind of, you know, hanging on to out of anybody.
Right. And this week, the revenge game, I guess, also here, Gonzaga hosting San Francisco and then hosting St. Mary's, David.
It's big week.
And yeah.
These are decent teams, and Gonzaga is a one seed. It's and they're at home. I don't think San Francisco is a good story, and I don't want to downplay that, but they are not, in my opinion, a tournament caliber team. There were times I thought that they were, but Rocco just made a good point. Well, you know, it's not easy to go to it's not easy to go to St. Mary's and win, and it's not easy to go to San Diego and win. Well, it's not easy to make the NCAA tournament. You have to win games that are hard to win to do it. Those are games, while not easy to win, that a tournament team should win, and they didn't. So I just don't see it happening for anyone other than Gonzaga unless they get the automatic bid.
And Titel, what about Gonzaga? When are they ever going to lose again?
They can't. BYU is the second best team in this conference based on conference record. Gonzaga just beat them last Thursday by 30 points. They won 12 in a row with each of their wins coming by 13 or more points. The only thing that might hold them back is the X factor. I really thought Killian Tilly was going to come back with a vengeance as like the missing piece of this puzzle. Not that it's a difficult puzzle because they're looking amazing. He's been very ineffective off the bench, only 10 combined points in his last three games. The good news is they're so good at everything else, who cares?
One more conference to discuss. Talika, let me bring you back in here. And should we even be discussing this conference, this show, or should we
relegate it down? I forgot about them.
Down to our under-the-radar shows on Wednesdays. Here is that Atlantic 10. It does have one top 50 net team, I guess.
Normally, I would be discussing my favorite matchup, and that's going to be the Arch Baron Cup between St. Louis and Dayton. Unfortunately, the Billikens had an awful, awful week. First, they lose at home to Richmond, and then they lose on the road at Rhode Island, where they had a chance to bounce back. And mind you, this is the same Richmond team that lost at home to LaSalle.
Joby, just
this is all. I mean, and I'm so. I mean, yeah. Hey, the question of the day: what is the team you want to look out for? Oh yeah, Joby, say St. Louis. Go ahead. Yeah, way to go. At least we had the at least from this conference's standpoint. That unlike the Super Bowl, the Rams did beat the Patriots because because the VCU. I think VCU right now, if you did a when I do a seed list, VCU is inside the bubble because the bubble stinks. But in order for them to not be the at large, to get an at large, they will have to take a loss to someone in the A-10, which means, you might not be in that bubble anymore on the good side of the bubble.
Yeah, yeah. Any loss would be a bad loss. I mean, Davidson 7-1, but well, Titan, what about VCU? Is there anything here? Or is just
as a Patriots fan, it's easy for me to talk about the Rams this week. Sadly, I don't know if Fordham's ever going to win a game this year. Luckily, VCU is going to win plenty of them. They've really bounced back. They had a bumpy road early on, trending upward, back-to-back wins over some good conference teams in a bad conference, albeit over Duquesne and GMU. Getting it done on defense, much like Houston, you cannot make a three against this team. Only 26% allowed from behind the arc. And all they do is shift, which it's easy to say, like, you're going to shift if there's a pick and roll or whatever. When you have five starters who all stand 6'2 to 6'8, it's like you have all the different puzzle pieces. It doesn't matter who switches because it's the same height of player.
Yeah, if it were debate class and you were tasked with making an argument for VCU, you could do it. I know the RPI is not the measurement anymore, but it's still pretty solid. The net, not awful. The problem is just with the rest, everything else. They have the win.
The non-conference strength of schedule of three is the only thing that really stands out to me.
Yeah, the SOS is good, and there isn't – but they've just – the win at Texas is good. The neutral floor win against at least a Temple team that's on the bubble. But does that offset the loss at Rhodey, the home loss to College of Charleston, who we thought was good but isn't? If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be VCU. But I did want to say, while I don't think the profile is there or even close, Davidson has gotten better as the season has gone along. And they're at least playing like a tournament-caliber team, even if they don't have the profile to show it. And it was similar to last year, and you may recall they really made Kentucky – was it Kentucky sweat?
Yep.
And I think if they continue to play like they have been and they get the auto bid, it could be similar now because Davidson's playing well.
Well, we're just about out of time. Just real quickly, there's the upcoming schedule. VCU is at GW and at St. Bonaventure this week. Davidson, you mentioned they are going to be at UMass and I think that's their only game on the schedule this week.
Yeah.
But real quick, we do have one other team that is still in the top 25. David, I know you had a few comments on them, so I'll quickly go to you on Buffalo. Despite the loss of Bowling Green, barely hung in at number 23 and number 25 of the two polls there. Now that's two losses, and how many more can they afford if they're also going to slip up in the conference tournament and still get an at-large bid at this point?
Not many, and they've got two really tough ones on the horizon when you look at Akron and at Toledo. This is still a good team. I'm glad that the voters still respect them. The point I wanted to make, do we want to hold off until Wednesday or do it now? One of the teams was the team that you started the top of the show with the blind resume is Lipscomb. And if you're a fan of Buffalo, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not dogging Buffalo. I'm trying to say that there are other teams that aren't being looked at all, that if Buffalo's 25th, then these teams are at least 35th. One is Lipscomb. Another one I like even more, and I like Lipscomb a lot, is Wofford. When you pull the two resumes up, I don't see a whole lot of difference. And on the court, I don't think there's a whole lot of difference. Like, if Buffalo's 25th, then why aren't Lipscomb and Wofford getting a little more love?
And I think that's a great point, and I think we'll discuss it a little bit more coming up on Wednesday night, our Under the Radar podcast. Two teams that I think are extremely dangerous if you get them in the NCAA tournament, Lipscomb and Wofford. But on that note, let me go ahead and pull this down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts on the evening. And Rocco, let me start off with you.
Yeah, just a couple of things. You guys touched on a couple of these teams. I didn't really chime in. So Mississippi State, I think, over the last week made the biggest move And part of that was because of what their opponents on their resume were able to do on top of what they were able to accomplish. So before last week, the Bulldogs hadn't had a significant road win. They took care of that at Ole Miss. And then you had teams like Clemson and St. Mary's pop into the top 50. So they went from 3 quadrant one wins to 6 in one day. And so Mississippi State definitely, I think, was the biggest mover in the bracket because of that. And they're going from a team we don't know if they're on, you know, quicksand, and now they're a lot more concrete. So good job by the Bulldogs, a little bit of luck there. And then Iowa, I also agree, although they have 4 really impressive home wins, if you look at what they've done on the road, there isn't a lot there yet. They really still need to get that win either tomorrow at Indiana or pick up 1 or 2 before we get to the Big Ten tournament, because I think that's the one area that's missing from Iowa's profile.
Good point. Salika.
I think a week like Friday in the MAC would be one of the power conference's worst nightmares, because now you have a team like Bowling Green that's in position to be the auto bid, and Buffalo's in at large as long as they don't continue to slip up. You also have to keep an eye on conferences like the SoCon and the Ohio Valley as possible multi-bid conferences, because of teams like Belmont, Murray State, Jacksonville State, and you've got at least 3 or 4 teams that are capable of either getting at-large or auto bids out of the SoCon. So that should help to thin what's so far been a pretty unworthy bubble this year.
Pretty unworthy, to say the least. Joby.
I've often mentioned that when Tony Bennett does a schedule at the beginning of the year, he'll try to purposely schedule for where the closest regional is for where Virginia would like to go in the sub-regional. For instance, this year, Columbia, South Carolina is that answer, and Virginia played at Angry Frank. Chad also mentioned that if Duke and Tennessee are higher on the seed line, that strategy will have failed even if you're number 3. But maybe the thing that might prepare Virginia more than anything else to get past what has been the bugaboo of March is what I call the Saturday-Monday fix that they have found themselves in. This week, you'll see almost a Final Four-like schedule for Virginia, with Duke on Saturday followed by at North Carolina on Monday. But that's not the only time. In the month of February, Virginia has 2 other Saturday-Monday games set up where they play, in the other cases, a relatively double-digit level type seed like Notre Dame, followed at Virginia Tech. Very tough game for especially Virginia. Then Pitt, 2 days later, at Syracuse. You know, so you're traveling a lot. It'll be interesting to see how Virginia handles that, and if that is the sort of formula that finally gets past the UMBC ghost and other ghosts that Virginia has found in the tournament.
Right. And Salika, you think you just made a comment in our little text chat here. Maybe what Virginia should have done is go and played a road game at Ohio Dominican in Columbus. Yes. But I tell, let me give it to you.
Just had some breaking news a couple hours ago. The Women's Basketball Hall of Fame announced their class of inductees for 2019. Wanted to give a shout out to 3 of the outstanding players who made it. Number 1, Valerie Still. She still holds the school records at Kentucky, a little school you might have heard of, for the most points and rebounds in a career, not just for women, for anybody. Tisha Panichero, she was the 1998 Wade Trophy winner at Old Dominion. 591 career steals is still number 1 in ODU history. And Ruth Riley, an amazingly decorated woman. She was the 2001 National Player of the Year at Notre Dame. She made the game-winning free throws to win the 2001 NCAA title. And she was the 2003 WNBA Finals MVP and the 2004 Olympic gold medalist. Congratulations to all these amazing women.
Yes, congratulations, definitely. David, let me let you finish out the show.
Okay, real quick. Salika used to do something called Throwback Thursday on the site, where he would go look at old games and NCAA tournaments. And believe it or not, it was 40 years ago when Indiana State and Michigan State played in the NCAA tournament championship, and how instrumental that game was in taking college basketball. I think it was already on the way, but this really propelled it from a regional interest, where people watched their own regional teams but didn't really watch it on a national basis, to where we started to have national programs. And again, like just the key players that we had in that game were amazing. I mean, you know about Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and then there was also George Mason's strength and conditioning coach, Andy Durahan. It's just hard to believe that it's been 40 years and look at the role that that game played into where College Hoops is today.
Oh, congratulations to all the great players in that game, including Handy. But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm Chad Sherwood. We've had Jody Fortson, John Salica, John Titel, David Griggs, Rocco Miller. Check him out at bracketeer.org. We'll be back again later on this week with an Under the Radar. We'll talk more about those schools like Wofford and Lipscomb, and a bracket rundown show on Thursday as well. So keep an eye out for everything on the website, and we'll talk to you again real soon.